Welcome to this training resource by Dynamic Church International. This course is called A Winning Team, Coach, Training, and Resources. And we're glad that you have joined us today. We are going to be going through this with a group of people. And so I'm going to have each of them introduce themselves briefly and tell a little bit about just their name and where they are located. So if you'd go ahead and do that, fellas.
My name's Jim Kloss, and I live in Guelph, Ontario, about an hour southwest of Toronto.
My name's Dave Hunt, and we're in Airdrie, Alberta, which is just 10-15 minutes north of Calgary.
Chris Mabry, London, Ontario, about an hour and a half southwest of Toronto.
My name is Hans Timmermans. I live in St. Mary's, about 15 minutes west of Stratford, Ontario.
My name is Ron Nelson, and I live in Calgary, Alberta.
All right, and I'm Al Middleton. I'll be leading the group today, and I live in Airdrie, Alberta, just in the western part of Canada. Some of you may be joining us from other countries or other parts of the world, and we welcome each one who has joined in on this session. We're going to go right to lesson one, and then we're going to come back to these introduction pages here. So if you will scroll down just so that you'll be able to follow the material. And by the way, if you don't have these materials in print, you're able to do so. Go back to the initial opening pages of this, and you can actually see where you can download and print these materials out. If you want to do that and then come back to this session, you're welcome to do so anytime, of course, and that's available. Other books that we'll be talking about as part of this training course, and so we'll look at that here as we go along. But if you'll scroll down to lesson one, and it just keep going down several pages down.
I would like to say, if you are not seeing on the screen the PDF file, you have to go back to the web page for this course and download Adobe Reader, which is a free software, and then come back and open up this link, and you should see the material on the screen.
Okay, thanks, Jim. If you'll go down to page 6, it should say it just below the top part of the screen here. Session 1 is sharpening our structure. And we'll scroll down to the next page, and you'll see the introduction to that. This course is designed so that you prepare ahead of time, and then when we come together, we can discuss the things, the content of the material, so that we get a good understanding of it, so that we are able to pass it on and equip other people as well. You'll notice here that you're to read before we meet together, read the introduction, be prepared to share how you believe this coaching team will help you to effectively lead your present life group leaders and develop future leaders. This is fourth book in a series of leadership books, and this one is designed to help you train group leaders and develop them to be future coaches and so on. But anyway, you're to prepare that ahead of time by reading it and be ready to discuss it. And the second point here is read how to use this training workbook and be prepared to share about that. And then study the sample reports on and faith goals on page 4. This is designed to, as leaders of the church, to keep a record of what's happening in each of the groups, just so you know where you're seeing God moving and where perhaps there's things that are not moving along as they could be or should be, and the reports will enable you to keep an eye on that. And then there's other materials as we'll cover as we go along here. But anyway, let's move down to point 5, because as you come together as a group, as we are doing here today, we will be going over this material and discussing it together. So even though if you're listening in on this session, you may not be able to interact with us, you can participate in the sense of following along as we interact together, and hopefully that'll be useful for you. So let's start off by getting to know each other. Actually, you've turned down, scroll down to page 9 now, and you'll find that there's a list there that we can continues, and so if you'll just take a moment to do that. There will be, actually it's page 10. Page 10, it says essential principles. Okay, here we are. I'm sorry. Page 13. It's the numbering is a little different on the screen than in the book. So page 9 in the book, page 13 on the screen. And sorry for that confusion. But anyway, you'll notice there's a place to list the names of the participants in your group. And what we're suggesting here is that you list these all in the same order. And there's a reason for that. And we won't do that today because we do... We're not going to be able to meet together locally as a group, but you do this if you're doing it locally. And if you list the names in the same order in each of your books with your phone numbers and your email address, the idea is that if you have information you want to pass out, depending where you are on the list, you might be the third one down on the list, you simply contact the person below you on the list. And that goes to the bottom of the list, then back up to the top, and back to you. That way you know everyone has received the information. If you want to pass on prayer requests, you can do the same. And that way it becomes an active document, not just a list of names. And so that's very important for you to be able to use that. If you will move back now to... as we get to know each other, as we do this, why don't we just spend a little bit of time talking about some of the good things that God's doing in our groups. We're going to assume in this session that most of us have completed the other books, and we are learning how we can be better at equipping our group leaders. So share a little bit of experience about some of the things you've been experiencing in your groups or that God's been doing in the past that you're excited about, that you'd be able to share with us as a group. So it's different ones, please feel free to share that. Anyone?
Well, I'm a pastor of discipleship at a local Presbyterian church. What we have is we have many small groups, but somewhat in disarray, and it's the end of the ministry year, and so I'm trying to reorganize and regroup and refocus. So many of my examples are more of... how to refit an existing system rather than seeing how well it is working now. And so that's the perspective I hope to bring to this discussion.
Well, thank you, Jim. Anyone else?
I'm kind of excited. I don't know if the rest of our group is so excited about this, but we have one of our groups in Carstairs. We've got a couple that have just agreed to be, well, they haven't agreed. They're looking at becoming apprentices for the group, which is kind of exciting. So we're meeting with them in the next couple of weeks. So something I guess to not only get excited about but pray for, because it's so difficult to get apprentices. It's something I've been very thankful for.
Well, I kind of went through a downer period where a couple of my life groups actually dispersed, including my own. My own is starting to come back together again slowly, which is a good thing. The other two are planning to get back together, meeting again in September. But I've been talking to a young fellow that I've been wanting to be a leader for some time, and he has taken the training and he has started a new group in two towns that are just to the west of us. Part of their group comes from Strathroy, and the other one comes from Poplar Hill. And there are already 18 people, and a fellow in Strathroy in Poplar Hill has already agreed to be an apprentice and is taking the leadership courses. So that's pretty exciting. We're still going to have two new life groups, and they're very evangelical in their outlook.
All right, that is exciting, and... It's interesting how groups will kind of rise and fall. Some will multiply rapidly, others will fade away. So you just have to accept that as part of life, I guess. But that's great that you've got some new groups getting going there. So anyone else?
Well, our church in Calgary here, Pastor and I have swapped roles. The pastor was caring for life groups, and my area was... outreach and discipleship. However, we're swapping those roles where I'll be taking the discipleship and life groups, and pastor's going to be taking on more of the role of the outreach component. But what's interesting is, the comment is that The feeling is bringing new people into the church is most effective through life groups, and of course we agree with that wholeheartedly. We've got three groups that are that do have the one-to-one discipling component in them, and they seem to be the most effective groups that we have. But like Jim, there is existing structures and there's existing mindsets in place, so working at refitting that. So the next step is taking all the life group leaders through the Leaders Who Lead series. So I've laid that out, and we're going to see where all this goes.
Okay, Ron, I'm sorry I missed part of that. I got cut out here somehow. That does happen occasionally on the online, so just bear with us. All right, that's wonderful. Well, God's doing some exciting things out there. I've had opportunity this past week, just yesterday met with one of the pastors of our church and meeting on Monday with another one. It's a large church here in Calgary, and they have a number of small groups, but they are just beginning a house church movement, which is going to be kind of an exciting development for them. And I'm hoping to have some influence in the direction that some of that takes. We'll see. But I appreciate your prayers. On Monday, I'll be meeting with one of the key pastors regarding that. So God's doing some neat things, and we're glad to be a part of it. Let's go back and to the top of this, the page 3, which is the checklist. And if you'll notice the first item, we're going to discuss that, the introduction. So you'll need to scroll right back to the beginning of the document pretty well. And if you will do that, we'll discuss that together. Okay, I hope everyone has that, the introduction. It's right at the beginning of the book, right after the cover page. And let's just kind of go down through this. In any endeavor, it says here, winning teams do not just happen. No, they are the result of vision, planning, strategy, training, and persistence. Now, everyone wants to be on a winning team, but most people are not willing to pay the price. And so a winning team, being on a winning team, the members are people who have ownership of the vision. They develop trust within the team. They have common goals. They have credibility to influence others to make things happen. They have expertise and experience to accomplish the task. Let's just pause for a moment and discuss that a little bit. What does it mean to you to be a part of such a winning team? And why do you want to be a part of this training?
Well, one thing that attracts me to it is the ability to do something by working together that any of us could not do alone. And so we bring our unique gifts and calling, and there's a synergy of it building into something, the whole being greater than the parts, in a sense.
I, too, enjoy the learning from each other. As I was listening to Chris earlier, I know that church, and I'm part of the sister church of that church. You need to have ownership of the vision, and I think that's happening in that church. The pastor has got a vision for discipling and small groups, and Chris is in that church as a leader, and he also has a vision, and he's championing, I can't say it very well, that vision, and consequently, people are catching the vision, and things go forward. I'm working myself in a different church, and they're going through a lot of turmoil. I'm not a member of that church, but I've been asked to work with that church, and the pastor has just left there in the process of calling a new pastor who has a vision for discipleship, and he's doing things to get this discipleship on the way, and they want to use DCI to do this, but there is no one who really carries the vision yet, and the people are not really being motivated by mass to go forward. So that's ownership of the vision is very important.
Okay, that's excellent. I think, you know, normally you would be meeting together with a group of coaches and group leaders in your own church, your own local setting, and so having that vision locally and a common vision and goals that you're working together on, I think, as you say, Jim, it's so much easier to work with a team to do something than it is to try to do it alone. And so it's very important that be a common understanding. We really are, the church really is about fulfilling the Great Commission. And that's the mandate, that's what Jesus has given us to do. And the next paragraph says, you have been effectively leading others in a life group, and that's, I'm assuming that each of you have been involved in that. You have been fulfilling the Great Commission. You're already doing that. So as a result, God has called you now to coach other group leaders, and He gives you the opportunity to expand your ministry through the church, community, and beyond to the world. And so what you're doing in equipping others now is going beyond just having a personal ministry, as important and as effective as that is. It's also important that those that you equip and that you're ministering to are equipped now to go on and minister to others, so that you have a multiplication as an expanding, ever-expanding ministry network. And ultimately, your ministry could be huge as you maximize that potential. Anyway, let's go look at the quote down at the bottom here. This is by a football coach, but I think that it's very practical advice and one that applies to us as a church. It says, for maximum team accomplishment, each individual must prepare himself to the best of his ability. So notice it's an individual development in part of the team. And then put his talents to work for the team. You must discipline yourself to do what is expected of you for the welfare of the team. Without supervision and leadership and a disciplined effort by all, much of our united strength will be dissipated, pulling against ourselves. Let us not be victimized by a breakdown from within. And so as he was challenging his basketball team to work together as a team, surely what we're doing in the church is of greater importance, and we need to be pulling together as a team. If you'll turn over to the next page or scroll down on your screen, we'll look at how do you use this training workbook. Okay. We'll just read along here. It says, before taking this training, you should have, and this is important for you to know, should have completed the Explosive Growth Disciple-Making Process Workshop. You should have completed the one-to-one basics, one-to-one discipling, and dynamic discipling, and one-to-one dynamic sharing. You should have completed Learning to Lead, which is the apprentice leader training, and served as an apprentice. You should have completed Leaders Who Lead, life group leader training, and served as a life group leader. Now, this is important that you cover this material. However, if you haven't, feel free to continue on with us here. But to let you know, if you're listening, you can either order these books or you can download them for free online, lesson at a time, and go through them just as you're going through this lesson now. These materials are available. Go back to the cover page, the front page of our website, and you'll find your way to those materials, and we'll be very happy to have you go through that. So I'm going to encourage you to do it. But if you are a group, you have group leaders that you're training, this material that we're covering today and in the sessions ahead of us will be very helpful for you. The above training comprised your life group ministry base. This workbook is a continuation of that training and follows the same format. And so just follow along with us here. It's designed for you to coach your team. It's for you, your pastor, and other coaches. Normally the pastor is the one who leads the coaching team. That this is very flexible. There could be other settings, home church groups getting together just to encourage one another. There's a number of ways in which this material can be used. Like the above training, this book is designed to equip you so that you can use it to pass it on to your disciples, and your leaders now could become coaches later on. So who you're training, do it in a way that is reproducible, and this material is all done in a reproducible way, so that what you give them, when they're a coach, with their leaders, they will be able to do the same and know that they're doing a good job with them. Just some suggestions for when to meet. We suggest that the pastor meet with the coaches together once every 4 to 6 weeks. Now, again, this is strongly suggested. You may want to meet every week to go through this training, especially as you meet initially, maybe every week, every 2 weeks. But then as you go along, you may want to stretch that out to where you meet every 4 to 6 weeks. It would be sufficient to kind of keep everyone motivated and on the same track. This is a time of vision, evaluating, training, planning, sharing, encouraging, and praying together. And it will be a valuable and enjoyable experience for everyone. The pastor should also meet individually with each of the coaches every 4 to 6 weeks again. So, again, a suggested time is to meet as necessary to encourage, equip, and to pray together. We believe that the church should be organized, and there needs to be some organizing. But let me just read this in the box here. Why don't we have somebody else maybe read that box for us?
The church is a living organism, a body built around relationships, not an organization. It has been designed by God to be healthy, grow naturally, and reproduce. However, while it is not an organization, it doesn't need to be organized.
Okay, so it's very important that we have a system that is organized and is adequate to really meet the needs of a growing church. All right, let's just read down through the table of contents here. This book is about becoming sharp in our effectiveness, and there's several sessions you'll see on the table of contents. It's sharpening our structure, sharpening our attractiveness to reach new people, sharpening our relational skills, sharpening our reproductive or equipping skills, and mobilization, multiplying leaders and ministries. And so that's what we're going to be doing. If you'll turn over, and we're going to take a look at on page 4 in your workbook. Just scroll down till you come to a sample report and faith goals. It'll be several pages down, and we're going to discuss that here briefly. Okay, a sample report. This is has some numbers in it. This is this is nothing rigid or legalistic about this at all. That's not the intent. But you will find that information is often been said that is the lifeblood of an organization, and so if you have good system or stream of information flowing, then everyone knows what's going on, and you can discover where God is blessing and also find out where there are problems, where there needs to be attention given to help further and develop individual groups or individual coaching areas of the ministry. And so this is designed to help you to set some goals for your groups so that you are always looking to the future, always looking forward. And how can we reach more people? How can we effectively equip people? Down at the bottom, number 4, it's a number of pairs of actively engaged in the one-to-one training, the basics, the discipling, the sharing, stating what is, and then number 5, talking about the number of people that receive Christ. In some of these areas, you may have to put 0 in, and that's okay. Be honest about it. It's not an evaluation of you as a leader and saying you're doing a great job or a poor job, so much as just so you know what's happening and what needs to change. There will always be stories of changed lives, and down at the bottom, it'd be very exciting for the church to be hearing some of these. And, they could be used in encouraging others to get involved in your life group ministry. On the following page is a blank copy of the same form. And just use that, and this is the sort of thing you should fill out and bring together. As you come together as a group like this, as a group of coaches, you should be able to bring this information, and as you hand this in to the pastor, you'll have a complete picture of what's going on throughout the small group ministry. If you only have 1 or 2 groups, it's not such a big deal. You probably know what's going on. But as this grows, and it's intended to grow rapidly and to great extent, you will find it becomes more and more difficult to know just what's happening out there. And so rather than assume it's happening, it'd be better to know. Any thoughts or questions on the reporting system here?
Yeah, one difficulty I have had is in getting group leaders to report, and I don't know if this is because it's converting an old system, but it seems like I have a real trouble getting them to meet and getting them to report, and I try to cast the vision, but then I just seem to be forever chasing after, And it becomes a real challenge to keep them on track. Do you have any suggestions?
I have always found the same as reporting seems to be like gathering hen's teeth, which don't exist. It's very difficult to get people to do it. And how we've designed this is that as the coach meets with his group leaders, rather than have him hand in a report to him, if they could fill it out right there, it will likely happen. In other words, the coach asks for the information, and then he fills it out on his report. And that's the pastor will ask the coach for the information. If he doesn't have it this time, he'll probably realize he needs to gather that so that he'll have something to say when he's asked for it next time. So I find that by kind of pulling it up rather than expecting it to just be volunteered, I think you'll find that it will be more effective. Don't be discouraged if they don't report, but as you meet, as we suggested earlier, as the pastor leader of the coaches meets individually with them, then it's a time to talk and to say, well, how many groups do you have going now? How many do you have new people joining your groups? Well, how many would you think are joining your groups? Do you have names for those people? You know, I mean, you can kind of pull it out of them a little bit in more of a natural conversation rather than a legalistic reporting system. So that's how I found it to work best. But any other suggestions? So did some rest you've tried or found it works.
Yeah, our church has struggled with the same thing. And we've gone to a set report, but we try to keep it as simple as possible. Like the number of questions is a few and not too prime.
Okay, well, it's a challenge, but one that I think would be good for you to at least give it a good effort. And if you can come up with a simpler or better system, by all means, do so. But you do need to know just what's happening out there so that you can service it effectively. Let's move along to the next page. Just scroll down again to page 6 in your book. The next page on the screen, it should say 10 essential principles. What I'd like to have us do here is there's 10 of these, so we need to move quickly through them. But if we could take turns, hopefully you've worked on this ahead of time and you have this completed. If you would, someone would take number 1, read the statements, and answer the questions for us, and then we'll have some discussion, then move on to number 2. So who would like to begin for us?
Okay, principle number 1 is they clearly state and circulate statements of purpose, vision, values, and common goals. Leaders should spend 50 to 80% of their time communicating these concepts to the people. And what is our church purpose statement? We have just been working on that. It is Jesus' kingdom made real, every person, every nation. Then they're working out the mission and the values. We're actually just in the midst of that right now. And the one of the key things that I'm hoping will be a sea change is taking spiritual formation, disciple making, as the sort of the main value that will be the motor to expectation to serve godly relationships and reaching outward. Now this is, you know, it is a Presbyterian church, and so it means a session is over pastors, and I am not a senior pastor. I'm considered staff member. So there's someone recommended a book, Leading from the Second Chair. It does mean that I'm trying to influence the process. I can't drive it. But what I'm trying to do then is bring the principles taught here into the mission and goals, so that people can see a process as well as the teaching content. What I feel like we've missed is the process, and to get the church to agree in the process is key. And I, you know, that's really what I'm trying to work through right now.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Any thoughts or other comments on number 1? Well, let's move along. Number 2, who would read that and tell us how you answered that?
Okay, I'll go for this, I guess. Do I have a clear sense of the direction vision of our church? And our mission statement is loving God and sharing His love with others, which blends very well with the idea of the Great Commission. And I see a strong desire. I think this statement is pretty well communicated to the congregation.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Does anybody want to read number two and then describe the process for developing people into maturity in your church?
I can read it, but I'll let somebody else answer it. They emphasize the importance of respect for every individual by providing opportunities for each one to develop skills in living the Christian life and being equipped to lead others. People are your most valuable physical resource, giving them opportunities to contribute their gifts and abilities. Describe our ministry process for developing new people to maturity.
Do you think, Hans, would you say that you have a process in your church for developing people to maturity? If not, maybe someone else could share what you would call a process that you're working on in your church.
In our church, you do have a process, Al, but I don't think it works very consistently. People run the courses, at least at our location, every year they run one course, maybe, and it's very inconsistent. It's not promoted very well, and it's always put on in the spring when people are getting into the garden. So I think there would be a lot of room for improvement, and I don't mean to be critical, but that's just the way I see it.
Okay, thanks. Dave, would you say you have a process in your church?
Sorry, Al, I've been on the phone off and on here, but I'm trying to keep an ear on here. We've been definitely we have a process, and I didn't write anything down here. I guess I assumed that this is just my old, our dynamic church's process. It's to take people, first of all, through a series of one-to-one courses in the basics, discipling, and helping them to learn to share their faith. And then as they reproduce that and share that with others, they begin to develop into maturity. And then ensuring that they're working in constantly doing their daily things like daily devotion and prayer and Bible reading and those kind of things. And then as they go through that, then we take them through the leadership process. The key thing is to simply get people to be sharing their life with other people using the materials that we provide for them.
All right. Good. Thanks, Dave. A process doesn't need to be a complicated thing, but it needs to be something that is intentional, that has a direction, that everyone in the church, especially in leadership capacity, understand the process. They know where it is that we're trying to lead people, so that when a person arrives at a certain stage, everyone knows what the next step is, and you're in a position, you have equipped people ready to take individuals on to that next step. And so it's a matter of being intentional, I think, as much as anything. Let me just read number three and four here, because there's no comments on them. But number three says, emphasize trust, not rules or control. Tell them often that you trust them and show them that you do. I think that if you set up a bunch of rules, people will tend to try to violate those rules. It just seems to be human nature to want to do that. Where if you have a relationship of trust, people will be glad to follow along with you and take the direction you give. So as leaders, make sure that you work very much on the whole area of developing that trust relationship. We talked about that in one of the other books as we talked about how to develop a trusting relationship. Number four, it says they are gospel people driven. Gospel people driven kind of seems to be, how do those two fit together? Well, in other words, they're reaching out to new people. They're sharing the gospel, reaching out with the gospel to new people. So develop a mindset of reaching out to those outside your church circle. Do all you can to welcome new people. Ask yourself, what would surprise and delight a new person who fellowships with us? Maybe just briefly, something comes to mind, think of something that your church has done recently that if a new person came in, they'd say, wow, that's kind of special. I like that. I think I'll come back. I mean, that's what a church should be looking for. And so as you think about what are we doing, how are we attractive as people do come? Because most churches do have regular visitors regularly have visitors come to the church, people who are maybe looking around, shopping around, what is it about your church that would make them say, this is a nice place, I like it here, I'm going to come back? So that's what effective churches are trying to do. Number five, who would read that for us? And then discuss your answers.
We are friendly. The best way to get to know people to smile and be friendly to new people is to give your people more responsibility. This shows them that you trust them and it will encourage them. It will also help them feel confident in themselves. They will display a more positive attitude that new people will definitely notice. So is our church friendly and attractive to new people? I would say yes. And in what ways do they show that they are friendly? I think there's a genuine friendliness that's developed, and it's not based on status or who a person is or where they've come from or what they've done, but basically on the person. Part of it is the environment that we fellowship together in. It's very casual, but a part of it is, too, is that we have a very wide range of people, right from PhDs to people that are on social assistance, and yet they're all the same, and they're treated the same. So, yeah, it's genuine.
Okay. Thanks, Ron. Number six says, develop a team leadership mentality. This will create unity and strength to creatively use the spiritual gifts to achieve our common goals and provide quality service. Minimize the layers of management, drive the authority to make decisions down to the functioning level. And the life group is really an ideal system in which it's at the local level, the functioning level, where decisions can be made right there in your own life group. The groups need to see themselves as an entity, not independent from the church, but with authority to be able to make decisions as far as outreach and care and so on right there at the local level. Number seven says they emphasize free, open, face-to-face communication. Leaders always be available and accessible to everyone. Explain your ministry and how you relate to people. I have found over the years that by just being on the phone, or if you're at a distance, or if you can meet for coffee, getting close to people, they need to, I feel that as a leader, if you want people to follow you, they need to know your heart. They need to understand what you're thinking. They need to understand what's important to you. And it will become important to them because of that relationship and respect that they have for you as a friend. And so very important that each of us have that kind of relationship. Number eight, who would do number eight for us?
Could I just say a thing about that previous one? I was really a minister to this week thinking about 2 Timothy 3:10 and 11, where Paul says to Timothy, "But you have carefully followed my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, love, perseverance, persecutions, and afflictions." And I just think in there you see captured that whole idea of I just kept asking myself, what type of relationship would it take for someone to be able to say that of me towards them, and for them and the intentionality to be able to say that towards others?
Excellent, Jim. Thanks for that. Paul obviously had that kind of relationship. It's been stated, I think, that Paul had probably about 13 or so people that we know of that he had a very close mentoring kind of relationship with through the years of his ministry. And so it's not a mass thing we're talking about here. It's a matter of getting close to the right people. Okay, number eight, who wants to read and discuss that?
They de-emphasize hierarchy. Make heroes of those who demonstrate that they are team players. Reward such people by giving them positions of leadership. And how God has prepared you to be a coach. Now, I still have my old answer down here, and I was thinking about this when Ron and I went together, did this together. It was all my training and preparation and pastoral leadership stuff and that kind of thing. But as I'm looking at this now, I think really the key thing that has made a difference and allowed me to begin to coach people has been the trust that I've built with them, and really just to be able to help them know that what I share with them from God's Word really is alive in my life, and that I'm trying to pass that on to them. I think that's been really the biggest thing.
Hey, that's great, Dave. Thank you for that. Number nine, someone take that one.
They see everyone as a potential leader and provide quality training for everyone. Do not try to change everything at one time, but continually improve the quality of your service to others. Train people according to their spiritual gifts, and they will provide better service. And so the question is, what is or are your spiritual gifts? I would say the major one is encouragement.
Right, which is a perfect gift, qualification to be a coach, because they definitely need a lot of encouragement.
Yeah, I think the big thing is to provide quality training for everyone. I think as a leader, you need to be a facilitator. You need to be one who helps people to become all that the Lord wants them to be, so that no one gets left behind, to quote a famous person, to south of the border. The thing is that, you know, people need to be encouraged to use their gifts, and oftentimes it doesn't happen, and then they feel that they're not able to, and they've never been given the opportunity to develop their gifts. My gift personally is that of a teacher, I guess, so that's what I see as a very important aspect of this whole thing.
Hey, thanks, Hans. Number 10 says, effective churches choose leaders who make it a habit of asking people, what do you think? Try to use the ideas given when making decisions. And so I don't know if this is something you have can give an answer to, what your church would be like in a few years, but there may be a corporate decision and not something you do on your own. But would anybody like to share what they would like to see their group or church become in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I would like us to see a whole process of transformation in our thinking, so that we share a common objective, and that we align all that we do according to that, rather than a program-centered, meet-my-needs approach that we seem to be struggling with right now. The question is, how do we get that, like I said before, that thinking realigned from leadership, so that there's support for this type of thing, there's buy-in, and there's synergy. And so I feel like if we work through this hump and we kind of get going in the right direction, then we can dare to dream again.
All right, thanks, Jim. If you go over to the top of the next page, page 8 in the workbook, it says, what would I be willing to risk? Now, that relates to the last question. In order to see that happen, Jim, would you be prepared to answer what you personally be willing to risk to see that happen?
Well, yeah, I'm looking down on that. And the point is, what I think we're struggling with right now is we want to do something new, but we want to keep all the old going at the same time, and all the old. And this is really putting pressure on us as pastors, that we have to be able to risk letting all sorts of stuff drop, and risk the just quite a continual list of complaints from people to say, no, this is the way we're going. And I think the summary of that, and for me personally, like I look down personality, the risk of acceptance, we just can't be people pleasers. I don't know that finances is a problem. Program's a big one because of sustaining it all. Buildings, we're not in a bad situation there. I'm not so concerned about that. Events are like programs, things that have to go, so that we focus on the right things. But I think I see it coming down to purpose, that we've defined our purpose closely enough, and then we bring alignment of all that other to fit into it. Without that, we're just putting out fires all the time and never let the main thing be the main thing.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Jim. Down at the bottom of that page, it says, which of these two diagrams would best represent the actual purpose of our church? And one is very much a program-centered church. Each program is working independent of the others. or you have a church which is purpose-centered, disciples, making disciples as being the means of equipping people to share the gospel, which is really the ultimate purpose of fulfilling the Great Commission, is making disciples who will share the gospel with everyone and make disciples of them. And then to enhance that and to develop that kind of disciple in the church, there needs to be worship, there needs to be fellowship, there needs to be teaching. So all of these things, and this is where a lot of the programs would naturally fit in some of these categories. But they're all focused on the central purpose of the church. Very, very important. A church that is doing that is going to see much greater results simply because they are intentional. They are focused on where they're going. Let's skip over to page 10 in your workbook. And if you're scrolling down, keep going till you come to where it says, where is our church in the transformation process? And let's just go quickly to that. Okay, it says compare each point in column 1, program approach, with column 2, which is people approach, and assess what we value by circling the appropriate number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, for each point. 1 most is most like column 1, 6 is most like column 2. And so I wonder if you could maybe just, as we look down through this, there's a number of things here that really help you to see whether you are transitioning, whether you're still very much an unhealthy traditional church model, or whether you're a people approach, a healthy disciple-making church model. Now, some would maybe challenge us to say that, well, a traditional church isn't necessarily unhealthy. Well, I believe in the biblical perspective, since we are intended by God to be disciple-making churches, I believe that it's unhealthy if we're not doing that. And so often the things that we do in the church are keeping us from being the kind of church God wanted us to be. So let me just ask for kind of a summary report of where what your score, what your bottom total would be there, whether you feel that you're healthy or unhealthy.
Well, I did the analysis and it came out at 42. And the so we're on the lower third or so. What I feel is we're asking questions, but we're getting to the point where we're going to have to make this a decisive break with the past and embrace these costs that are mentioned earlier. I guess my question is, do we do this, do we try to be as abrupt as possible or gradual? And so that would be one of the questions that actually came out in the pastor's meeting this week.
Anyone have some thoughts on that? How would you answer, Jim, on that?
Firstly, I don't have a lot of experience with this, so let me say that before I say anything else. But I think you need to be preaching the vision. And when you have a vision where you want to go and people start buying into the vision, then all these other things will fall into place. I was part of a church many years ago where the programs were like holy grails, like they had been there for so long, and my grandfather started this program and it's still going, we want to keep it going, but it didn't fulfill a purpose anymore. But once you start casting a vision and people start buying into the vision, and this has to come from the top leaders, and then you can start changing things. But if you do it too soon, then you wind up, if you just start changing things without the people seeing where it's going and being part of the vision, they don't see any reason to change. They're quite comfortable the way they are.
Good, Hans. I'd agree with that. I use the illustration. If you had a string on the table, just a piece of ordinary string, and you want it to move, it's much easier to pull the string than it is to push it. And I think it's the same with churches. You pull them with you into the future. You don't try to push them because they'll just buckle and bend and resist. I think that the key to that is, as Hans is saying, is to keep that vision before them. What could we be? What could we become? And show them what it could look like. And I think in addition to telling them, you need to also be sure to model that. Show them what it would be like by demonstrating it in your own life as leaders. Any other thoughts on that? What are some of the other scores that you gave to your local ministry there?
Well, I had 110, I don't want to make anybody feel bad, like Jim, for having such a low score. We, because we are a small house church model, we're fortunate in that we have a lot of this stuff going for us. However, at the same time, I want to say this does not make us necessarily any better, because we have a lot of issues that we're struggling with, and every week I seem to find that we keep falling back into a traditional institutional mindset, and it's frustrating because you can set up all that you want, but I think people are people sometimes, and they keep falling back to what they're used to. So you know, we might be healthy, but we could get sick real quick.
Yeah, very good point. All right, anybody else?
Yeah, I gave us 100, which I'm sure would be very, very different from what Hans would see from the current church. I think we're in that healthy situation because we are new. We've only been around 6.5 years. It did give us low marks on organization, which is very organization-driven. And the budget for ourselves, that's mainly because of a new building, which is taking a huge amount of the financial resources. But I agree with the keeping the vision out there. And I think it's reasonably well done over the Overton.
Okay. It definitely helps to, if you're a new work, you can implement things that would be very difficult in an older established congregation where traditions have been entrenched for many years. So it's just a way of kind of looking at it. I think it's a good exercise. I've used this with church boards and church leadership. I just let them basically evaluate their own church, and that way they can't say, well, you're just being critical. But the reality is that it's a good way to get people to recognize that there is a need for change. Change is always a difficult thing for any of us, and this is one way of getting them to see the need to make some changes. So use this as you have opportunity. It's a very effective little tool to do so. Let's go to the next page, which is, we'll wrap this up quickly here, Sharpening Our Structure, Church Development Guide. Now, this is simply an exercise where you say, okay, we recognize there's some needs in our church, and what are we going to do, and who is going to do it? That's key. And so what you do here is you, together as a group, you gather the strategy, at least look at the strategy, check off we are presently doing or completed, and those that we should add or improve. So there's two columns there, presently doing or completed, and the final column, we should add or improve. So as you look at these things listed, you simply say, yes, we're already doing that. Let's just look at one of them here. The pastor preach on keeping the gospel at the center of all that we do. Now, that may already be something that's happening, so you would put a check mark there. Or if it's not, it may be something as the leadership of the church say, pastor, you know, this would be a good idea. Why don't you do a series on why we need to keep the gospel and making disciples very central. And so, okay, you put it in there. You check it off. We should do that. And you look at this, and there's some blank spaces here. Add as many as you want. But I would suggest that you pick one or two, no more, and you say, okay, let's do that this between now and the next time we meet. Okay, so together choose one or two from above. Down at the bottom here it says that. Record the specific action required on the action plan. And or below, rather. So you write that in the action and goals here. And assign to someone, okay, action should be reported at our next coaches training. And so you set a date as to when you're going to be meeting next time. And you say, okay, Bill, would you be willing to do this, look after this? All right, Bill, we'll be expecting a report from you on what has happened. He may come back and say, well, I didn't get that done. Okay, well, at least you've looked at it. Where so often what happens is we talk about things in the church, but nobody is ever really assigned to do it, so nothing ever gets done. The chances are very good that Bill will come back and say, well, here's what the progress is, and you can begin to move forward. So then what you do is next month you take and begin to improve one more thing, one or two more things. And month by month, year by year, you will see constant progress being made in the church. Gradual, steady, solid growth and progress. And that's really what I believe is a very healthy, growing church. Any thoughts on that? Have you used that in your setting, any one of you?
Yeah, we've used it, and it is helpful. We're still trying to develop our leadership base, so the problem is coming back to it and to make sure that it happens for us anyway. But I think it does help us develop some of the things that we need to do. I think the key thing is just keep talking about the things.
And I think you're right. That it's just an opportunity for you as leaders to talk about some of these issues. And that's the beginning stage. And if you don't talk about it, then nothing will happen. If you do talk about it, then you have at least a hope of moving things forward. So anyway, that pretty well wraps it up for this. If you look back on the page 3, which is our outline, normally what you do down at the bottom is a prayer and closing. You pray for each other and for our life group leaders. Go over the preparation assignment for session 2, and that would be on page 13 is lesson 2, and so it would be actually page 15 is your assignment, and you're to go over that and do the material ahead of time, read and study, and come prepared to work together on that. And then down at the bottom it says set a date and time and place for the next meeting, and so we'll be doing that for our meeting here, but if you're listening to this online, then you would need to set a date and time and place for you to get together. We recommend that you meet about once a month. Usually works pretty good for most churches. You may want to do this more often. You may want to meet on a weekly basis, and that would be fine as well. But meet as needed, and God bless you as you do. But we just have one or two close in a word of prayer, and then we'll wrap it up here for today.
Father, we want to thank you for this time we've spent together. Thank you for the excellent material that we have here to get churches on line and on target. Thank you that we have a purpose that you've given us to spread the gospel to all the people around us and across the world. And so we pray that as these materials are being listen to on the internet, that it will motivate many people to reevaluate what they're doing, and to get that it will get the church working more smoothly. So we commit all this to your care in Jesus' name. Amen.
Dear Heavenly Father, I want to pray for these my friends here this morning. We thank you for this opportunity we've had together. Lord, we all agree with Jen's heart this morning that we want to see our churches transformed. Father, that we see our church as useful and effective for your kingdom, Father. And so we just pray that you would guide and direct in each of the steps as we desire to see our churches move towards us. We lift this to you, the King and ruler of this universe, but also the head of the church. And we pray these things in his name, Jesus Christ's name. Amen.